Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Wednesday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, the Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. 1 hour from now, Joel Klatt, big college football weekend. I got to tell you, Joy Taylor, we've seen this all the time with athletes. There are Michael Jordan used to love. Kobe used to love to play in New York City. There are environments in which athletes, you know, you play a lot of games. There are some games in basketball, especially or baseball, you're facing an old teammate. For Steph Curry to go into KD's building and the Brooklyn fans were cheering for MVP for Steph. I'm like, you know that game. And Steph's not like a grudge holder. He's pretty selfless. But
right.
You can kind of feel like Steph loved that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has an ego. Right. And, you know, it's a little extra sauce on it when it matters a little bit more, when you know people are going to be discussing it. Yeah. You get up for games like that, and that was a scene last night.
Yeah, it was. Boy, Golden State's good.
Yes.
Like, really, really good. I want to talk about this, though. It's a bigger picture. Steph had 37. Warriors are the best team in the league on analytics, on the floor. And I'll be honest with you, outside of a Milwaukee, you know, maybe a Denver on a good night. I'm not sure the league's real close right now. But this is what I thought about watching that game. 20 months ago, Tom Brady left the Patriots. And 27, 28 months ago, KD left the Warriors. And there were a lot of similarities. Is that the number one similarity is about a year and a half later with both, and the teams look really good again. And there's other similarities. So both Brady and KD were with the smartest organizations in their respective sports. And both made a decision for different reasons about a year before they left, I'm leaving. They didn't make it public, but there were a lot of rumors Brady was leaving and KD was leaving. And then when they did leave, their organizations, the Patriots and Warriors, were not shocked, disappointed, but not shocked. And then for 1 year, the Patriots, Joy and I watched this, they were in rebuild. COVID opt out. And they're pretty clunky. Not pathetic, but clunky. And the Warriors, a lot of injuries. Let's just kind of, this is a rebuild year. New arena, rebuild, whatever. Clay hurt. Steph, take more time off. And yet both, the smartest NFL franchise, and in my opinion, the smartest NBA franchise, did the exact same thing. 1 year, we're rebuilding. Don't worry, we have enough equity in New England and Golden State. We've won a lot of titles. We've got equity with our fans. They'll be patient for a year. We're going to draft well. We're going to develop well. We're going to spend a little money and do what smart people do, rebuild quickly. And here we are, 20 months after Brady left, and 27, 28 months after KD left, Golden State's the best team in the league, and I would want no part of New England in the playoffs. That is why New York Giants, I'm not giving you 6 years to rebuild and 4 years to rebuild your offensive line. That's why, you know, New York Jets, you don't get 5 years to rebuild. The Cowboys, and we don't even consider them like Patriot or Warrior level, took a year to rebuild their defense. The Chargers rebuilt their offensive line in one off season. You want to give Baker Mayfield 5 years? I don't. Smart people solve problems quickly. And with both the Warriors, who lost one of the greatest players ever, KD, and the Patriots, who lost the greatest quarterback ever, these aren't just all-stars leaving. These are all-time transformational talents left. And yet with both, within a year, a big year rebuild, and then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, oh, yeah. How? Because the Warriors GM, their coach, and their star player are really smart, and you don't get a lot of ego. You want to know why New York teams stink and why some Chicago teams stink? It's ego, big city ego. And I am for smart teams. That's who I root for. You root against my team. If they're dumb, I do. Because smart teams equal more efficient sports equals a better viewing experience. So I don't want to hear about you giving your offensive line a four-year rebuild or your defense a three-year rebuild. I don't want to hear about it. Or your quarterback gets a five-year runway. Patriots, Warriors, lost all-time great talents. Year and a half later, right back in the driver's seat. Absolutely outstanding, smart decisions. Patriots had a great draft. Warriors got Jordan Poole. They developed Mac Jones. They developed Jordan Poole. And you look up and you're like, wow, they're really, really good again. I'm not giving you a long runway. By the way, Steve Nash, after having to deal with that last night, talked about the Warriors and his Nets.
Well, I just don't think we're in that category yet. We got a lot of work to do. You know, we're trying to, you know, improve as a group, get better. And, you know, hopefully we can find a way to overcome some of our deficiencies by the end of the year. I think it takes time. You know, we started the year with a continuity plan from last year that got thrown out the window, obviously, when Kai didn't come back. So we're trying to build and figure it out. I mean, you play a really good defense, it really tests you. And I think tonight it was a great lesson for us that we got to double down on some of our principles.
Brooklyn's still good. Warriors are great, even after losing KD. So there is a belief going around. OBJ wrecks teams. And I'm not a big OBJ guy. Like, I think he's really talented. I think we talk about him probably too much. I'm guilty of that because he's interesting. And Joy and I do a show that we want to be interesting. So I don't think OBJ is, you know, a star player. But it is interesting. He gets blamed for a lot by a lot of people and legitimate people. So Troy Aikman on Dallas Radio said something, and I've heard this from a lot of people, but when Troy says it, you know, it matters more. He talked about Stafford and OBJ and a little Baker and OBJ and the reality of playing with, you know, like a star receiver who wants the ball.
Matthew now feels some of the pressure that maybe Baker Mayfield felt, and I've got to somehow find a way to get the ball into his hands because that's why he's playing on this play, and it's not good, and it's not good playing quarterback when you feel pressure to get the ball to any one particular player. It just doesn't work.
All right, so let me, I hear that and I think, I'm hearing that a lot. That's an argument to be made. I'll throw a different view of the world at you. See what you tell me what you think. So OBJ left Cleveland. And that was going to solve everything. And I think Baker probably had his worst game in a year Sunday. OBJ was nowhere to be found. And Matt Stafford, before OBJ got there, was horrible on TV. Big TV game against Tennessee. And then he shows up for the Rams-Niners game and had 15 snaps. Oh, by the way, he left the New York Giants. And they're still crappy. So is it possible that OBJ is a convenient excuse for a poorly run New York Giants franchise, an overrated but popular, I would acknowledge, quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and a Rams offense that's gotten way too finesse over the last 6 or 7 weeks? I mean, did OBJ play in that D-line for the Rams that got pushed around and gashed for 160 rushing yards? Oh, he didn't. Okay, I was just checking that out. I don't think, and this is not a knock at OBJ, because I do think he's interesting. I just don't think he's as critical as everybody's making him out to be. At best, he is the Rams' second best receiver. Cooper Kupp's like putting up in, he's going to have 120 catches. At best, he's probably their seventh best player. He's not Jalen Ramsey, not Cooper Kupp. Probably not Stafford. He's not Aaron Donald. I don't think he's as effective or grades as high as Andrew Whitworth. I think he's become, because he's popular and there's a lot of glare around him, I think OBJ has become a convenient excuse for a poorly run Giants franchise, a popular but overrated quarterback in Cleveland, and a Rams offense that's got a lot of issues. Like, they don't block well guard, center, guard. They're sometimes too cute. They get pushed around by physical teams like Tennessee and the 49ers in Arizona. This is not a knock on OBJ, but good God, he's getting blamed for everything. I mean, seriously, he's getting blamed for everything. And I'm not a huge OBJ fan, But I will say this, the biggest hit by the Rams against the Niners was actually a block by OBJ. It's the only big hit all night. I'm throwing out a different opinion in that I don't think OBJ is what's wrong with the Giants or Baker or the Rams offense. For the record, I like Matt Stafford. He's an upgrade over Goff. But you tell me all the big wins in Detroit where he went toe-to-toe in big wins, a little bit of pressure, and won the day. Didn't beat Aaron Rodgers a lot, and those were the big games. And you can say all you want about that, but Kirk Cousins has faced Aaron Rodgers 7 times. He's 3-3-1. Okay? Mr. Shrinks in the primetime, Kirk Cousins. So, you know, it's like sometimes you'll meet somebody and they're like 48 years old and they're still blaming their parents. It's like you can blame your parents for your teen years, maybe your early 20s, but by 47 years old, in most instances, you kind of control your life. I think we're just blaming OBJ for everything here. And I'm not even the biggest OBJ fan, but there's a lot of blame to go around beyond the second best receiver, third best if Robert Woods was still with the Rams and not hurt.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Jerry Jones is all fired up for the game of the weekend is Kansas City and Dallas. And there's this thing called, confirmation bias. People want something to happen or they believe in something. It's why conservatives watch Fox News and why liberals watch MSNBC. Doesn't make either right, but they're telling you what you want to hear. And I see this in sports, and I see it with the Kansas City Chiefs. We love them because they're fun and they're flashy, and we love the way they play, and they're clever, and we love their coach, and we want them to be back. So therefore, they beat the lowly Raiders, who have the second lowest winning percentage in the NFL over 19 years, now have an interim coach, and lost a couple of starters, one to tragedy and one to just bad judgment, and now the Chiefs are great. So pump the brakes a little. Dallas is 8-1 against the spread this year. Why does that matter? The number one football brand in America is 8-1 against the spread. What it means is they've been so average for years, they're still undervalued. Kansas City, despite last week's win over the mighty Raiders, has hit on like 6 of their last 20 against the spread. Why? Because you can't unsee how great they were at their peak. They're overvalued. We want Kansas City, who struggled for 8 or 9 weeks to be back, so they beat the Raiders, and we have convinced ourselves they're back. They're 2 weeks removed from struggling at home to beat Daniel Jones. They struggled to beat Jordan Love at home, and I think Dallas rolls the Chiefs this weekend. Now, do I worry about the O's alarming Mike McCarthy clock management? Yeah. Do I think it would be easier if Randy Gregory was available? Yeah, he's fantastic. But if you look at numbers like yards per play, Dallas is number one in the league. Kansas City's not top five. They're barely top 10. If you look at yards differential, Dallas 3-1 over Kansas City. Points differential, Dallas 4-1, over 4-1 over Kansas City. Dallas does a lot of things really well. Virtually everything. They can run it. They can throw it. They rush the passer. They've got a game-taking cornerback. They've got the athlete in the middle, Micah Parsons. Dallas does virtually everything well. Here's what Kansas City doesn't do well. Make quarterbacks struggle. Even counting the Jordan Love game, the Chiefs are allowing a passer rating of 100. Dak, with those weapons, is a lot better than Jordan Love. I know the league's better when Kansas City, Andy Reid, Mahomes are rolling. I'm the first to admit it. But since when is beating an interim head coach Raiders team that's had chaos this year and tragedy, I don't think that means you're back. I think it means you're better, better owner, better coach, better quarterback, better roster, less chaos, and you are going to win that game convincingly. So we'll see what Nick Wright says. But I like Dallas this weekend. And Jerry Jones, by the way, is talking in Dallas. He's very excited for this.
It's not any other game in Missouri, I'll tell you that. And I'm in cowboy country, I believe, in Missouri. But everybody's so excited over this matchup. and I am too. I have such respect for their coach. I have such respect for their organization, and they've certainly had a lot of success these past several years. And it's got all of the matchups of going in the Lions' den. They have a great atmosphere. All of that is there, and they've got an outstanding team. We go up there and could come out of there with a win. It would be a hallmark win for us this year.
All right, 37 Cowboys, 24 Chiefs sounds about right.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
I was watching the Warriors dismantle Brooklyn, and, you know, Nick lives 5 minutes from, you know, Kevin Durant. So he goes to Nets games all the time, and I thought of Nick. I thought, boy, this is a good topic for Nick. And he joins us now live, Nick Wright. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Listen, I just don't think in life, I think who your allies and mentors are matters. So I thought leaving Steph for Kyrie was crazy town. And boy, it was validated last night. Like, if you're Kevin Durant, I guess I would ask you this, Nick. You're Kevin Durant, and you can hear them chanting MVP for Steph. It was almost like the Brooklyn fans were saying, bro, you're almost acknowledging you chose the wrong Hall of Fame point guard. Your thoughts on the evening?
Yeah, listen, leaving Steph for Kyrie would not be that dissimilar from me deciding, Colin, because you've been a mentor of mine, I'm abandoning you. You're like, well, who are you going with, Nick? Rogan. I'm going to go Joe Rogan. You've been good, but very successful, both very prominent, but maybe I guess I'm going in a slightly different direction than you would have thought. Listen, I understand why KD left the Warriors, because he was never going to get the love that Steph got in the Bay Area. What I don't think he expected was he's not going to get the love that Steph gets in Brooklyn either, evidently. So that ain't great. That's not what Kevin Durant was hoping for. And if you live on the internet the way I do, Kevin Durant yesterday throughout the day was liking tweets of random people arguing with a Warriors writer, Dieter Kurtenbaugh, about, because Dieter had written that the Warriors are winning the Kevin Durant divorce. So this was a game that mattered a lot to KD, yeah. One would think. We know it's a game that should matter a lot to Harden. The reason Harden hadn't been to the NBA Finals since he was on OKC is because the Warriors kept beating him. It was on national television. It was in Brooklyn. And KD had his first bad game of the year. I think that KD's been the best year he's ever had.
Yeah.
Was this season up until last night. I don't think those things are coincidences. And I do think it is fascinating that right now, if we were to say one of these two teams is going to win the title, no one would say, well, it's Brooklyn. Think about what that means. Because I thought a year ago that if Steph was going to win another title, he was going to have to leave Golden State. And I'm not picking Golden State to win the title this year, but they've got a great shot at it. The Nets, on the other hand, Steve Nash said it. They're not in the class of the best teams in basketball. They have an all-time great player in KD. Harden, who is right now around the 25th best player in the league, and they need him to be about the 5th best player. No home court advantage. A bad coach in Nash. And a mismatched roster. So, yeah, the Nets are not in the Warriors class. And that is actually a shocking development, Colin.
OBJ gets blamed for a lot, and he's not my favorite player, but do you buy the extra pressure that Stafford faced with OBJ as the reason maybe for his meltdown and Baker's meltdown?
Yeah, so let's talk about the resume, right? So a record-setting contract and didn't live up to it. Legit questions, does he make his teammates better? Has never won a playoff game. And when his team doesn't win, his biggest supporters will explain how it's everyone's fault but his. That's the resume of Matt Stafford. Now, it might also be the resume of Odell Beckham, but we don't talk about it that way, do we? Oh, wait, that is true. Stafford, couple record-setting contracts, never won a playoff game. He is the quarterback. You would think that, you know, could make guys better. No, I don't buy that Matt Stafford, when Odell was on the field for 15 snaps and had three targets, that the reason Stafford played poorly was because of Beckham. Like, did Stafford have intel we didn't have a week ago that they were going to get Beckham, and that's why he did a 360 in the end zone before firing the ball into a Titans D lineman's waiting arms and threw a pick six on the next possession? I think Odell, we will find out if the juice is worth the squeeze, so to speak, for Odell now that Robert Woods is out and he is important. But at some point, Matt Stafford has to be accountable for Matt Stafford's mistakes and interceptions. I know that we just blamed the greater Detroit metropolitan area for everything that went wrong with the Lions over the last 12 years, but he was the quarterback, and he did have Megatron, and he did have some weapons, and they never won a playoff game, and they only made it three times. Like, I think Stafford's good. He's obviously far better than Goff, but some of this stuff is on him. And for the Rams, Colin, if they don't win that division, they are on the road every week of the playoffs. And you are then asking Matt Stafford, with zero career playoff wins, to go, if the playoffs started today, this would be the bracket, Colin, at Tom Brady and the Bucks, then at Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, then at either Kyler or Dak. I don't think Stafford can win two of those games, much less all three.
So I think we want KC to be back because they're fun and we like their players. And we love their coach. But beating the second worst franchise in the last 19 years, to me, with now an interim coach in chaos, does not validate anything. 2 weeks ago, I watched them struggle at home with Daniel Jones. I watched them struggle with Jordan Love. I mean, what are you going to say if Dallas rolls Kansas City?
Well, Dallas is a really good team. I don't think they'll roll them. They obviously could beat them. But there's a lot here. Was that like the royal we? Because you certainly don't want the Chiefs to be good. I mean, here's my question for you, Colin. What's the last time you had an accurate take on the Chiefs? Was Lynn Dawson the quarterback? Was it the Elvis Gerbach era? Because I'm old enough to remember Mahomes never won a big game. I remember that one. I remember a fancy arm talent graphic Mahomes somehow got left out of. I think you blame Tui or one of the producers for that. I remember I don't see the separation between Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. Well, have you watched Justin Herbert the last month? Is Mahomes the best quarterback in his own division? Has Lamar overtaken Mahomes in the AFC, king of AFC quarterbacks? I remember all of it. And the reason I remember all of it is because you keep saying it. You just keep going back. I remember Josh Allen's better than him, going to beat him in the AFC Championship game. Nope, got washed. So here's the thing. The Chiefs absolutely could lose to Dallas. Dallas is really good. But the idea that, Mahomes been figured out. Teams are playing the most basic defense you learn to play your first day of Madden, and it's just broken Mahomes' brain. Yeah, it's either that, or he just went through a slump for the first time of his career and he snapped out of it. And by the way, I just have a question because, you know, you're poo-pooing the win over the Packers because the Chiefs only scored 13 points. And I get that. They were up against Jordan Love and they scored 13 points. I've been very busy, so I wasn't able to watch. Your beloved Russell Wilson scored how many points against that Packers defense?
Zero.
I don't remember. The game was a long time ago. Oh, zero. It was zero.
Okay, so
that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah, I'll take the Chiefs. I'll lay the 2.5.
All right. How about finally? Boy, I'm hearing a lot of this.
Yeah.
Rodney Harrison said this morning on Dan Patrick. You know, people are going to regret passing on Mac Jones, a mobile quarterback. What is your take on that?
Everyone's got to – here's the deal. So Mac Jones, everyone said going into the draft, most pro-ready, lowest ceiling. I think that's what we've seen. Now, to be fair, I didn't like Zach Wilson. I didn't understand the Zach Wilson stuff. And I didn't have a strong take on Trey Lance because he was a small school guy who hadn't really played in a couple years. So, when I was ranking quarterbacks, Lawrence 1, Fields 2, Mac Jones 3, because I didn't love Wilson, and I didn't know, and Lance was kind of like a not ranked because I didn't have enough information on him. Right now, I'd say Trevor Lawrence is going to be the best. I like what I've seen from Justin Fields. And Mac Jones, people are just hyperventilating about it. He had 198 yards this week. Brian Hoyer came in and had 90. The previous week, he had 139 yards. And the longest play was by the Patriots' defense. The previous week, he had 210 yards. And the longest play was by the Patriots' defense. My critique on Mac Jones is simple. In the AFC, will he ever be better than any of the following? Mahomes?
No.
Herbert?
No.
Allen?
No.
Lamar?
No.
Burrow? And I would argue Lawrence. Now, Lawrence has to show it, but I still believe in him. That's six guys. So I think his ceiling is the seventh best quarterback in the conference. So no, I don't. Everyone, this reminds me a whole lot of people taking Daniel Jones victory laps early, and now Daniel Jones isn't going to get a second contract. Now he's better than Daniel Jones, but I just don't see the high, high level upside that other people are claiming to see with him.
I really like Nick Wright's. You notice his hair is different now. He's got it's a cleaner Aaron Rodgers look. I like it. It gives him sort of a hipster. I like it. It's a good look for you, buddy.
Cleaner Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it does look like you shave occasionally.
You really hit for the trifecta here, buddy. Just take a shot at Russell Westbrook before we go, and you'll get them all in. Mahomes isn't going to lose. Rodgers is dirty. Get a Russell Wett. Come on. You got time. See you, Colin.
See you, buddy. Nick Wright. Very funny.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Rodney Harrison, NBC, great player for the Patriots, on Dan Patrick this morning. And he was talking about something. Well, why did the Niners pass on Mac Jones, who looks so brilliant today?
Everybody wants to get into this. I need an athletic quarterback. I need an athletic quarterback. Yeah, he can run around, you know, and do all these incredible plays at times, but you need somebody that can sit in the pocket, read the defenses, communicate to the offense, get everybody in the right position. And sometimes that's not sexy enough. A lot of these, you know, coaches, they fall to the pressure of the public.
Well, I mean, you can't run and do that. So here's some classic pocket quarterbacks in the NFL. Let's see how they're doing. Jared Goff is 0-8-1. Daniel Jones is 3-6. Matt Ryan's 4-5. Two is 3-7. Yes, there's Brady. I'll get to that in a second. Let's go to quarterbacks we think of. And the first thing we think of is running, even though they're better passers than anybody wants to acknowledge. Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. They are a combined 13-4. All right, let's go to pocket guys, but they do move pretty well. Aaron Rodgers, Dak, Mahomes, Josh Allen. Oh, they're all in first place. Let's look at the current standings in the NFL. Who leads every division? The American Football Conference, the AFC. Josh Allen leads the AFC East. He can throw from the pocket and move. Lamar Jackson leads the AFC North. He can move. The AFC South is led by Ryan Tannehill, who was a college receiver at one point. By the way, Carson Wentz is in second place. He moves too. And then the next division is led by Mahomes and Justin Herbert. They both move well too. Let's go to the NFC. Dak and Jalen Hurts lead the NFC East. You following my point? Aaron Rodgers leads the NFC North. Kyler Murray leads the NFC West, and there is the exception, the GOAT. Tom, as Joy says, let's not compare him to anything. He screws everything up. So we have verifiable truth that quarterbacks that move exceptionally, or at least pretty well, lead all but one division. And in three different instances, half the league almost, they're in second place. You think Mac Jones had to deal with the Jags, the Bears, or the Jets O-line? Like the other rookie quarterbacks, you think he'd look as good as Justin Fields? You got to be kidding me. Folks, we all know that if you grow up with a trust fund and I grow up with chaos, you got a head start. This is the best place for it. Can you imagine Trevor Lawrence in New England? I would get the efficiency and blow through a ceiling.
or Justin Fields. This is not a knock on Mac Jones. But you're ready to run Baker Mayfield, Teddy Bridgewater, and Jimmy Garoppolo out of the league. They all have higher passer ratings than Mac Jones. Mobility is the new NFL. You see it in college, you see it in the pros. That is not to say Tom Brady is so good at pre-snap he can't manipulate the world. But if Tom Brady could move like Aaron, I'd like him even more. Just because you're the GOAT doesn't mean you do everything well. Michael Jordan never really shot three-pointers. Can you imagine adding Durant shooting to Michael's game? We would no longer argue MJ LeBron. I love Brady. Imagine if he was mobile. Then that system quarterback stuff for 20 years in New England, we'd roll our eyes at. Mac Jones is doing a great job. He got a lot of things that went his way. But you guys want to run Teddy B out and Jimmy G out and Baker M out. And this guy's got higher passer ratings than Mac Jones. Mobility matters. I want my quarterback to move. I'm sorry. All the rules tell you, get a quarterback that can move.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's bring Joel Klatt on the show, the voice of college football. I'd love having him on. He's got Iowa State at Oklahoma this week. By the way, at Fox, we only air great games. We're the only network. It's almost like wrestling. We know the outcome before. And
that's right.
We only do great games, Baylor, Oklahoma. That's right. So I'm gonna throw a theory at you, and you just answer it.
Great.
Now, you know I don't like non-Power 5 teams.
That's true, and I'm actually with you on that one. I'm an elitist as well.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
But this is a little different year.
Okay.
That we have one great team, Georgia.
Yes.
And then we got about 7-8. I'm like, depends on the Saturday.
Yeah.
I like Michigan. I think Oklahoma State's underrated, but I like. And so in a year, I thought about this driving in today. With my swollen cheek. I thought, this is a year, let Cincinnati in. We don't have. If Bama was great, if Ohio State I thought was great.
Let them eat cake?
Let them eat cake. But you know what? This year, there's cake. There's enough cake for a non-Power 5. And I think they did beat Notre Dame.
They did.
Let them in if they go undefeated.
And remember, Notre Dame has not lost much in South Bend over the last few years. Not even Clemson could go up there and beat them. I believe that the last game that they had lost in South Bend was Georgia.
By a point.
So it's tough to win there, and they went in there and did that. They beat a Notre Dame team that I don't know if Notre Dame is as strong as those previous seasons.
They're not.
But
they beat them.
They beat them.
There.
And that needs to matter. I don't mind your theory. I think that at this point, there is a pretty plausible road to the playoff for a lot of teams, more so than normal.
Yeah.
Than previous years at this stage in the season. I think that there's a plausible road for Cincinnati. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Obviously, the four teams that are already in there. Obviously, plausible for Michigan State and Michigan. I think that you could see a scenario where Oklahoma State goes in.
Yeah.
There's a scenario where Wake Forest
works. No, come on.
I'm just telling you. There's a plausible. There's still a plausible road for Oklahoma. Even as far down as they fell. Just because of this fact, Alabama is all or nothing at this point, I believe. Now, we haven't for sure seen what the committee will do with a potentially two-loss Alabama team. But in my estimation, a two-loss Alabama team, a non-SEC champ Alabama team, would be left out of the playoff.
I totally agree this
year. So that means that they either have to run the table,
or they're out.
Arkansas, Auburn, and Georgia, or they're out.
I totally agree.
All or nothing. They're either going to be the number one seed, and Georgia will be three, or they're going to be out.
That's right.
The Big Ten champ, so long as there's only a one-loss Big Ten champ, right? So if Ohio State's that one-loss Big Ten, Michigan or Michigan State,
right,
they'll occupy a spot.
Okay.
So then it comes down to, does Oregon beat Utah twice? See, so basically there's two spots open.
That's right.
There is a really plausible road for Cincinnati if they're able to beat SMU and go on and
Oregon,
win their conference championship.
Oregon lost to Stanford. I don't want to hear belly aching.
And they're going to have to beat Utah twice.
All right. Let's go to my second thing.
Let's hear it.
Okay. So when you go to college, a fine university like Michigan or Michigan State,
okay,
it's not just your GPA. Hmm. It is not just your test score. It is, what did you overcome? Did you have a summer job? Was it an easy
road? Saying for admission.
For anybody. Anybody on a great college campus. It is not just, she had the highest GPA, she gets in. Well, if she went to a prep school and she had, we consider nuance to admissions.
Okay.
Okay. We know that. There's nuance. So when Michigan State beats Michigan, I hear a lot of this from Sparty fan base. And they love me, by the way. But I hear this from them. Well, we beat them. And I'm like, time out. It's the best loss in the country this year was Michigan's loss to Michigan State. It's to a rival. It's on the road. You were rolling them in the second half. And statistically, you dominated them. And you lost. But Michigan State got so high for its rival, the next week they get rolled by Purdue. And that the head-to-head matters. But when it was as good a loss, I have no problem Michigan being a slot an inch ahead of Michigan State. We can't.
That's crazy.
It can't all be GPA. Otherwise, what about kids that come from tougher families? How do they get into school?
Yeah, but you're conflating something that does have nuance to something that doesn't, which is a scoreboard and 60 minutes in which you play the game and there's a winner and a loser. So you're talking about admissions in terms of a subjective criteria across thousands of applicants in which some percentage will get accepted and some will not. That's not what the sports world is. The sports world is a game, and there's a winner and a loser. There is black and white. So I hear this, and Gary Barta, the AD of Iowa, who's the chair of the playoff committee, said this a night ago. He said, you know, watching the game aside, statistically, Michigan is just far superior to Michigan State. But here's what all of you elitists fail to realize, is that all of these statistics and this analysis is only projecting who could win the game or who would win the game. In this case, we have an actual winner and a loser.
But it's not
so I don't care how it happened or what statistically is happening.
You don't care.
They have the same record. They played on a field. Michigan State won.
Yeah. One team doesn't have a humiliating loss.
This notion is an interesting notion.
I would argue that this happens far
more often than you would think. Remember, Purdue got Iowa the week after the big emotional Penn State win. Bang, gets Iowa the next week. Purdue gets Michigan State the week after a big emotional win against Michigan. Bang. Remember Iowa a few years ago. Ohio State had beaten Penn State in an unbelievable game. Saquon Barkley took back the opening kick. They come all the way back. JT Barrett. Ohio State wins next week. They go out to Iowa. Bang. They get beat by like 30 points. It happens, right? So I'm not going to fault Michigan State and say Michigan is better than you because some of statistical analysis. I saw the stats. It was the scoreboard where Michigan State won.
All right. Third topic. So this is maybe it was always like this. And I'm just, this is recency bias, but it does feel like we live in a world now, and I think a lot of this is based on social media, where there are these avalanches and momentum starts, and you find very competent people fighting for their life or their job or their reputation or their legacy. So y'all wanted Brian Kelly out, not you. He's the best hire since Lou Holtz. I could argue since Eric Parsegian. Y'all wanted Harbaugh out. Oh, he's going to win his 10th. He's going to have his fourth 10-win season. Today, y'all want Sark out. Like, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year.
He did.
The first year I did the show, I couldn't get my hair right. You're building a culture.
I remember that.
Remember the set? The set was I sat here, and the peasant sat somewhere on the floor. Okay,
You did.
I couldn't get my
pedestal,
hair in
the set was an issue.
Okay, so today.
Now it's better. You found the recipe.
Look at this thing. It's like a perfect helmet. So today, Chris Del Conte, who's a great, probably the best AD in the country, you'd argue.
He's pretty good.
He said, listen, I'm not making excuses. But he came out and he said, 52% of our 2018 class and almost 50% of our 2019 class, they're no longer here. This is a rebuild.
Yes.
And I'm defending Sark. You want to run him off. All these guys you want to run off are doing pretty well.
You are big into analogies. Let me make one for the Texas situation and Steve Sarkisian. And before I make the analogy, I would state, I think Steve's a remarkable coach. He's a very good coach. Everywhere he's been, he succeeded outside of a small point in time in which he was having massive personal issues, which he has admitted and faced head on.
Yeah.
Everywhere else he's been, he has succeeded and done so on a pretty good scale, in particular at Washington when he took over a team that was 0-12 and built them into the team that Peterson then took to the playoff.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the analogy. If you're searching for a home, everyone talks about move-in ready, and you want to go and you want to buy a home that's move-in ready, right? And so you go and you'll see one house, and maybe it's a spec home, And this builder poured his heart and soul into it, maybe overbuilt it a little bit. But, man, I tell you what, the quality is really good. And there's that home. And then there's this other home that you're trying to build or trying to buy. And that one's more of a flip. It wasn't a tear down. It wasn't a spec home. It was a flip. And it looks nice, and it's probably a little bit cheaper and maybe fits in your budget. But then you start looking closely, and it's not built correctly, and you realize that you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to take it down to the studs because they didn't do the wiring right, the plumbing is not right, and it might look good from the outside, but you get in there and you realize the problems go way deeper than what looks like on the walls, right? The cover of the book does not give you a good indication of what the book is. That's what Texas was. So Texas, from the outside looking in, was like, boy, they were a couple of snaps away from being an undefeated team, and boy, they've recruited really well. And then you go in there and you actually look what was under the hood, and you look what was going on with the boosters, and you look what was leaving their program as far as graduation, like their quarterback Sam Ellinger, and the guys that they were having to run off in order to build back this culture of what he wants. And you have to understand, he had to go way deeper before he's going to build back up. This is one of those areas. I know no one likes five losses at Texas. I get it. And this is a program that should be great and will be great. But there's an element here of that you got to tear it way back down to the studs in order to build something back up that has staying power, that's going to be great at the top end, rather than window dressing and Band-Aids.
Hey, by the way, and I'll throw another one out there. It's not a big program, but Chip Kelly, they all want to run him out of UCLA. They're now bowl eligible. When Chip Kelly came to UCLA, to your point, he had to so rebuild UCLA, they got down to 55 scholarship players.
That's right.
And beat USC, that had 85, in a game in which he played 13 freshmen. He had to literally just start over.
Sometimes you've got to decimate the program in order to build it back in the right fashion.
And the problem is, Texas has a 2-3 year rebuild image. They may be a longer rebuild than that.
Well, they do fall into the category that at any given moment, you're 3 years away from a playoff berth.
Okay, that's fair.
Because of the recruiting base, yeah. Because it's such a rich recruiting base. Right. I think that it will turn around at some point, but you made a great point. Even Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year at Alabama.
And then second year got rolled by Utah in the Sugar Bowl.
And then the third year he goes on to win a national championship.
All right, let me throw this at you, Klatt. Right now, I like what we did.
So there's a lot of agreeing going on.
Okay, hold on.
It's very cordial right now. Joy is I think
making
that
me
you
a little
like
nervous.
This. Do you like it when there's
more? Yeah, okay. When two minds get together and you're on the same page,
Bernie
that's fine.
Bernie Sanders and Elon Musk may disagree mostly, but you see this week, but they may have something they agree on occasionally. All right, so I can't figure out Bitcoin. That's another
which
show.
Which one
entirely.
Of you is Bernie and which one is Elon?
please God, I'm Elon.
Probably. All right, let me throw one more thing I want to hit here. Okay, here it is. So I hear a lot of things about what is a great job.
Yeah. Coaching, you mean.
Miami, that is a great job. And I think to myself, well, you haven't been good in 20 years. A bunch of coaches that have won everywhere are going there, and they're all failing quickly, and I don't think the administration's all in. And I hear this about USC, and I do think USC is better than Miami. But in the history of USC, McKay was good, left for the NFL. Robinson, good, left for the NFL. Pete Carroll, good, left for the NFL. It's not one of these paternal Bobby Bowden guy stay forever job. It feels very transient to me. So I just want you to tell me, if Alabama's a 10, is the best job in the country, and whoever's number one, where is Miami and USC right now in your eyes? Administration, money, commitment, conference, everything.
I would put USC very close to the top. I think it's a top five job in college football.
Wow.
Miami, maybe a top 20 job. Maybe. Maybe. It's really difficult in Miami because I think that the competition in your recruiting footprint is more difficult, and you don't even play on campus. They don't have what they used to have with the old Orange Bowl, which was their identity.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bad stadium, but it's our bad stadium.
I liked it.
And I we played them there in 05, the John Beeson, Merriweather team. Like
it fit their program.
100%. And it was difficult to play there. Very difficult to play there. Now, you know, you go and it's like, is it filled up? Kind of, maybe. I think that they've lost kind of the the tackiness to their history through that stadium.
That's a good
and
way
I think
to put
that
it.
That's tough to overcome. Whereas USC, I still believe that USC, because of their recruiting footprint and because of the fact that if they are good, they own this coast.
They do.
The entire coast. You can't say that about Miami. You can't even say if they're good that they own their state. Right, because of Florida and Florida State and what goes on there. And by the way, UCF is about to be a quote-unquote Power 5 school in the Big 12. So I would put USC near the top, in the top five in the country. Miami might be a top 20 job. I'm not sure.
All right, one more thing. The state of Oklahoma thinks I don't like them, and I'll say it again. Oklahoma State's the most underrated team in the country because we're paying attention to Cincinnati and Notre Dame. We're not paying attention to Oklahoma State, just my
take. They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. So I think Iowa State's going to beat Oklahoma this weekend.
Wow.
That's my takeaway. But a bigger issue is the future of the program. Lincoln Riley, rumors to LSU. I don't buy him at all. Am I naive?
I don't think you're naive. I don't buy them either. I know Lincoln fairly well in terms of, you know, broadcaster-coach relationship. I've done a lot of his games. He is a loyal guy. He is a guy that understands that this opportunity was given to him, and maybe he deserved it, maybe he didn't, when Bob stepped down and all of a sudden he's the head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. This is one of the most storied and prestigious programs in the history of college football. I think that he feels an obligation to get them back to a point where they're winning national championships. I think Bob is still one of his great mentors, and Bob turned down opportunity after opportunity over the 20 years that he was at Oklahoma, and I think Lincoln will probably do the same. You go to LSU, what does that move do to you except start your clock to get fired, which is what every coach there has gotten, which is fired whether they won a national title or not. At Oklahoma, this is a program where you can win a national title and you can be there for 20 years. You can be the Paterno Bowden-style coach at Oklahoma. I don't think you can do that at LSU.
No, I think LSU is a pressure cooker. Also, you know how the Pittsburgh Steelers have a reputation is they've only had like three coaches or something, you know? And Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Tomlin. Oklahoma's a little bit like that.
A bit.
Bud Wilkerson, Barry Switzer, Stoops, Lincoln Riley. Now, they had John Blake for about an hour.
That's right.
Very quick. He was a great recruiter.
I think Fairbanks for about 30 minutes as well, if I'm not mistaken.
But by and large, Oklahoma is loyal to their coaches. They give you down years. It's a top five program. Why in the world would I? That's a classic example of people don't try to get happier than happy. If you coach Oklahoma, unless you go to the pros, there's no other job you should take.
Not if it fits, and it certainly fits there. I mean, Lincoln.
A lot of land there. You get a big horse farm, ostrich farm. I mean, it's all L.A. You get a little condo, and it costs you about $9 million.
Cheap real estate. Yeah, there you go.
Oklahoma, all these coaches in Oklahoma, they have these beautiful ranches. It's beautiful out there.
I'd like a ranch. That'd be nice.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, like a Yellowstone ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Can you see me on horses?
No, I can't actually at all.
Out there literally making things happen.
I can't at all,
steering
actually.
Steering cattle
the
into the field.
The last thing I think of when I think Colin Cowherd is every man.
You know, I take these shots with a smile.
I mean, you said your dentist was, like, even you were annoyed with you in the dentist chair.
I put on working gloves. Well, I moved them from one end of the garage to the other, but I have touched working gloves on more than one occasion. All right.
I look at them longingly and think to myself,
what could be?
What could be?
All right, Iowa State, Oklahoma. We only put great games on. I'm taking the Cyclones, who are a little better defensively. You don't think of Iowa State as having NFL defensive guys on the front. I think they have a couple interesting players.
Mike Rose is an interesting guy, and they've had success in the past against this Oklahoma team. So
there you go. Good seeing you, buddy.